Vasudehi Hitva. Giving up. Grahan. Home. Sutan. Children. Bogan. Material happiness. Vaidarbhi. The daughter of King Vidarbha. Madhira Ikshana. With enchanting eyes. Anvadavata. Followed. Panja Isham. King Malayadvaja. Jyotsna Iva. Like the moonshine. Rajanikaram. The moon. Translation. Just as the moonshine follows the moon at night, immediately after King Malayadvaja departed for Kulachila, his devoted wife, whose eyes were very enchanting, followed him, giving up all homely happiness despite family and children. So you can repeat. Just as the moonshine follows the moon at night. Immediately after King Malayadvaja departed for Kulachila, his devoted wife, whose eyes were very enchanting, followed him, giving up all homely happiness despite family and children. So purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Just as in the Vanaprastha stage, the wife follows the husband, similarly when the spiritual master retires for Nirjana Bhajana, some of his advanced devotees follow him and engage in his personal service. In other words, those who are very fond of family life should come forward in the service of the spiritual master and abandon so-called happiness afforded by society, friendship, and love. A verse by Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur in his Guru Vashtika is significant in this regard. Yasya prasadad bhagavat prasada. A disciple should always remember that by serving the spiritual master, he can easily advance in Krishna consciousness. All the scriptures recommend that it is by pleasing the spiritual master and serving him directly that one can attain the highest perfectional stage of devotional service. The word madhurekshana is also significant in this verse. Srila Jiva Goswami has explained in his Sandarbha that the word madhira means intoxicating. If one's eyes become intoxicated upon seeing the deity, he may be called madhurekshana. Queen Vaidarbhi's eyes were very enchanting, just as one's eyes are madhurekshana when engaged in seeing the temple deity. Unless one is an advanced devotee, he cannot fix his eyes on the deity in the temple. So, hitva grahan sutan bhogan vaidarbhi madhurekshana anvadhavata panjesham jyotsneva rajani karam. So Om Ganat Tibananda Shah Gananjana Shilakeya Chakshur and many Tam Gena. Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. So all of us, excuse me, all of us like to see something beautiful in this world. There's many attractive features. Of course, what's mentioned here is the attractive features of someone who has very enchanting eyes. Enchanting eyes. Just like the ladies sometimes, they do so many procedures with their eyes to make them more enchanting. You understand? They may put cudgel. Anyway, the cudgel's also put the kids up, around the kids' eyes too. They make their eyebrows longer. They have these lash enhancements. You ever heard of that before? Yeah, it's eyelash, lash enhancements, it's called. That's a politically correct word for it. Enhancements. at different parts of the body. So they have lash enhancements, and then different, like, they take a little pencil out. You see that little pencil, and they go like that around their eyes, like that. And this, and sometimes they're even putting in false, let's say, colors in their eyes through these contact lenses. It's like when I go to the optician or optometrist or the ophthalmologist, they have a whole selection of different irises that you can put in there. You can just, you can have blue eyes. I was thinking like that, become more effective as a guru. If you have blue eyes, you can really, like, people just say, wow, he has piercing eyes. You hear that? But sometimes, I mean, people are so, like, you know, clueless that, you know, just because someone has blue eyes, it just, like, affects them more. Like if a guru has piercing eyes, blue eyes. My guru's blue eyes. Oh, what beautiful eyes. What great, beautiful. Anyway, so the ladies do all these things. And then I guess nowadays the men do all these things too. So that their eyes are just like enchanting. And of course that's called Madhurekshana. And so there's an interesting story in Ramanujacharya's pastimes about a lady who had Madhurekshana, enchanting eyes. She was the girlfriend. Even in those days they had girlfriends. So she was the girlfriend of this Dhanurdas, later in Dhanurdas. Anyway, so, and the story goes that she was walking with him on the beach. And he was fanning her with one hand and holding an umbrella with another hand. It's really interesting. And he was walking backwards because you can't, usually you can't walk forward, you know, because you don't want to fan someone from behind. You got to fan them in the front, right? I mean, obviously, you can't. You fan them behind, what's the use of it? So, and it was, so he's walking backwards and he kept looking at her. At the same time, Sripad Ramanujacharya and his disciples, they were having some sort of deity festival there. So they were also doing a similar thing with the deities. You know, they had like a parade or whatever, Rath Yatra. South India, they have Rath Yatras, but it's not Jagannath Rath Yatras. It's, they take the Utsava Murtis. Utsava means like a festival in Sanskrit. So in each temple, they have the Mula Murtis. Mula means root. I mean, the big deities, basically. You know, for those of you who don't understand what I'm talking about, it means big and small. So Mula, the root deities, the main deities. And then they have the Utsava Murtis, which are about this small, whatever. And they take them out on a regular basis. I was in Sri Rangam, and every day they take the Utsava Murtis out, accompanied by a whole band, accompanied by people with carrying a palanquin, and they take them to different Brahmins' houses. It's really interesting. The deities go to different houses in the community. And then they come back for their noon offering, for their boga. So, and they also get offered things as they go to people's houses, too. So, anyway, so this festival was going on, and Ramanujacharya's disciples saw this in this man who was enchanted with his girlfriend. And they started laughing at him. I mean, it's kind of funny. It is kind of funny, but it's not sensitive to laugh at someone because of their attachments. Because if you laugh or make fun of someone because of their attachments, it just causes them to reject your instructions and become bitter. So that's one problem we had many times in the Krishna conscious movement. We would actually denigrate people for their attachments to the material world. You're so attached. You're like a hog and stool. So that doesn't cure the attachment. Anyway, so Ramanujacharya, he understood that his disciples were just going to drive this guy away from Krishna consciousness. So he told them to shut up, his disciples. Because they listened to him. Not like modern disciples. Anyway, so he said, shut up. I'll take care of this. And so he said, have this man come over and speak to him. So one of his disciples went over and said, you know, this great Acharya, Ramanujacharya, would like to speak to you. Okay, so he walks up to Ramanujacharya. And he says, Barbara's a Vedic, because it's all Vedic. I mean, they're all Vedic devotees, in one sense. And he touched Ramanujacharya's feet. And Ramanujacharya said, I have a question to ask you. And he said, sure, whatever you want to know, I'll tell you. And he said, why are you so devoted to this lady? I mean, you're just like walking in front of her, walking backwards. You could trip and hurt yourself, standing here holding the umbrella in your hands. And this Dhanadas said to Ramanujacharya, because of her eyes, she has enchanting eyes. And I'm in love with her. You can imagine even falling in love because you have enchanting. This love thing is just like really insane. Anyway, so it doesn't really, it's not really love. It's just like you are using someone to fulfill your needs. That's basically what it is. I mean, you have certain needs that you really, for some reason or other, you couldn't figure out how to fulfill them in a Krishna conscious way, so therefore you fall in love. So I mean, there's ways to fulfill needs without falling in love. You know, there's definite ways. I mean, you have friendship with people. You have, I mean, there's other needs. You know, there's not a need to fall in love. It's not one of our basic needs. So Sripad Ramanujacharya, he said to this Dhanadas, he said, look, I understand. He didn't argue with her. He didn't tell her like most devotees would tell people. You know, her eyes are just like, you know, vitreous humor. You know, they're just some bile, mucus, air, pus. I remember in the early days of the movement, I mean, people would give classes in such a scatological manner. Yeah, I remember one class, you know, the famous class, you were talking about, you know, what is this beauty? It's skin deep. We just peel off the skin. What do you get? Yuck! So why are you falling in love? You know, if you like the touch of, you know, another class he gave was, if you like the touch of someone's skin while you're holding their hands, just peel some skin off and hold the skin. I remember, I mean, I also said similar things. I can't just blame everybody else for being insensitive. So it's just like all these classes. Oh. So Ramanujacharya, he didn't say, you know, this is nonsense. You're acting like a pig. He said to him, hey, can I show you tonight somebody's eyes who are more beautiful? And he didn't say your girlfriend's eyes are not beautiful. He said, I can show you someone's eyes who are more beautiful. And so this Dhanadas thought, wow, that's a good proposal. So he didn't feel threatened. You know, he wasn't, his whole, Ramanujacharya didn't step on his false ego and, you know, just like threaten his sense of autonomy or anything like that. It's interesting when preaching. I understand, because sometimes we go in like gangbusters and preach to people and say that, you know, this, that, you know, your girlfriend is Maya, your family is Maya, 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 Maya. You're eating too much. Anyways, you're so cruel. I mean, so all this denigration stuff, you know. You're so cruel. You're eating animals. You're going to feed Yamadutras. It was like that song. What was that song? They're coming to take me away, away. They're coming to take me away. There was this song in the 1960s. It's about the Yamadutas. They're coming to take me away, away. They're coming to take me away. Or when I walked in the temple, you know, I was denigrated too, you know, just basically, I was told that unless you join the Hare Krishna movement now, your life is completely wasted. You're going to be as short as a, you know, we're living in caves, eating human flesh. Kali Yuga is coming. The she-jackal is vomiting fire. You know, quotes from the Bhagavatam, inappropriately applied. So Ramanujacharya, he just thought of this person's needs, because the need is to see something beautiful. That's a need. So he was very much need-oriented. You understand? He didn't deny the person had a need to see something or someone beautiful. We all want to see beautiful things. I mean, who likes to see ugly things? I wouldn't go to see Phantom of the Opera. Of course, when you're young, it's interesting. When you're young, you go to see these horror movies, which have pretty ugly monsters. But that's not so you can see the monsters. So that's so you can experience an adrenaline rush. That's another need, you know, for excitement that children have. Excitement. So, no, you know, ugly. I mean, you know, people like pets that are attractive, right? Like you have a need for seeing something beautiful, so you get a beautiful cat. And if you want to make your cat or dog more beautiful, you'd send it to get manicured or something. Or to the hairdresser, you know. I see these people walking around with the French poodles. The hair fluffs out here. It's real thin here. They have a thin waist. Isn't it? You ever seen that with French poodles? And then they fluff out again in the back. Because they want to see something beautiful, so they make their dog beautiful. Can you imagine that? Oh, my God. So Ramanujacharya, getting back to the story, he wanted just to show him something more beautiful, just understanding the guy's needs. He needs to see something beautiful. Fine. Okay, so I'll show you someone with more beautiful eyes. So this Dhanardas was thinking, where's that lady? He was thinking Ramanujacharya was referring to a lady, which is kind of interesting. So then that night he took him to the temple to see the deity. It was in Sri Rangam, Lord Vishnu. So he took him to see the deity, and the deity had enchanting eyes, and Dhanardas, he just kept looking at the eyes. And as a result, he became such a great devotee of the Lord, and famous story, that he became detached even from his wealth. And later on, Shripad Ramanujacharya showed his disciples how detached Dhanardas was by having his disciples steal the jewelry from Dhanardas's wife. And Dhanardas was so detached from it, he was upset that his wife didn't give all the jewelry or didn't allow all the jewelry to be taken from her to be given to the ashram. So anyway, so that's the point. Megan, we do have a need to see something beautiful, as well as other needs. I mean, obviously we have this need to see something beautiful. So, but Prabhupada says here, the last sentence in the purport, unless one is an advanced devotee, he cannot fix his eyes on the deity in the temple. So what are we going to do about that? If we can't fix our eyes on the deity in the temple, we're going to be looking for to see other beautiful things. Of course, I mean, really, you can't fix your eyes on your wife either, you know. because you really don't have that. I mean, it's even harder to do that than fix your eyes on the most beautiful deity in the temple. So, because your mind keeps wandering from one thing to another. You're not nishta materially or spiritually. You're not stable materially or spiritually. So, before that, you know, before we can fix our eyes on the deity in the temple, then we have this system here that is mentioned that in regard to the wife of King Malayadwaja, who was previously Paranjana, being dedicated to the service of King Malayadwaja. So that's the point. Like Prabhupada said, before, in the beginning stage of devotional service, that we're attached just to, you know, hearing and chanting and our internal realizations and internal life, then we should be attached to our service. Understand what I mean? He said there's two different stages. Of course, we're always attached to our service, but before you have this internal thing going on, you can keep your eyes fixed on the deity, you just like, completely attached, devoted to your service, because your service is a connection with Krishna, and the service is given by the spiritual master. So here, King Malayadwaja is, in one sense, representing the spiritual master, and his wife, Bhaidarbhi, is representing the disciple. And so this comparison is given in many, many times in this particular section of Srimad Bhagavatam, the relationship or the mood of service that the wife has. Not any wife, but the exemplars amongst wives have towards the husband should be emulated or understood, the essence of that, not that the spiritual master is having embraces by the disciple or anything like that, but should be emulated, that mood of selfless service should be emulated by the disciple. And so, just to cite some examples of, wives and husbands that set that particular mode, we have, of course, Sita and Ram, which is very similar to the story here, that when Lord Ram was going to the forest, Sita demanded to go too. Now, you may think, oh, that's pretty nice, going to the forest, you know, a camping trip. You know, we picture this thing in our mind that is more or less similar to modern society. Like if I say to someone, we're going camping this weekend, then someone understands, you know, we're going to drive there in our cars and we're going to take our tents and probably going to have propane heaters to keep the tent warm. And, you know, we're going to be bringing all this food with us, too, at the same time. And we're going to have our cell phones and GPSs with us. What else? And computers, you know, satellite connection for the computers. And sometimes you go to these camping places, and they actually have the satellite dishes so they can watch satellite TV. I mean, most places, actually, because when I go, we have this Krishna camp, and I go and I walk places, and everyone has their satellite TV on their campers and everything like that. So you think, you know, Sita and Ram in the forest is just like a camping trip. What great fun. But Sita Devi, she was accustomed to a life of luxury, and her going to the forest with Lord Ram basically meant that they were going to just eat raw food, you know, like whatever that was available. They would lie on the ground. I mean, the first night after they left the kingdom, they basically had to lie. They were going to lie at the root of a tree, and Lakshman, he just spread out some dried leaves for them to lie on. And I don't know if you've ever experienced lying on the floor. When I was a young brahmachari, we always sleep on the floor. At most, we would have just like a straw mat or something on the floor. And, you know, you get little black and blue marks on your body if you're not accustomed to it. Anyone's ever done it? You know, you just like lie, and then the morning there's little black and blue marks. After a while, you get adjusted to it. Adjusted to it after a while. It's not always like that. But the first few days, it's like, it's painful. So Sita Devi was accustomed to living in very opulent situation on very soft beds, all over neat, with servants, people to comb her hair for. I mean, imagine living in a palace like that. People comb your hair, people fan you, so many cooks. And then all of a sudden, she's just eating the stuff that comes from the trees. Not always mangoes. It's only mango season, certain time of year. And then sleeping on the floor, and then wearing this tree bark clothes, which is kind of rough and itchy. And then not having so many ornaments like that. I mean, later on, she got some ornaments. But basically, in luck, poor Lakshman, he had to carry him around. He had to carry her ornament bag around with him. So imagine that. So she renounced it all to be with her husband. All that external stuff that she was so attached to. She's Lakshmi. You know, Lakshmi is Lakshmi, you know. Hate to say that. But Lakshmi means all opulence. I mean, everybody's praying for the mercy of Lakshmi. And Lakshmi renounced it all. Sita Devi renounced it all just to serve her husband. So you see this particular example of dedication like that. So, I mean, there's other stories too, like Karnama and Devahuti. Devahuti was born in a very rich family, a Kshatriya family, and Karnama Muni was a Brahmin, so she had to serve him in very austere fashion. Of course, later on she got paid back for it. She got an aerial mansion, flew around, having some romantic affairs for a while. And then she gave birth to 9 daughters. And then later, Lord Kapiladeva. And then there's also Sita and Durga and Gandhari and Dhritarashtra. So many examples like that. So basically, what does it mean to us? I mean, as followers of His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada, we should be dedicated in the same way that a wife is dedicated to the husband, or a chaste wife, not any wife, not modern wives. I mean, you read the newspaper and you're like, so-and-so just broke up with so-and-so, you know, famous movie stars and things like that. People are just breaking up every day. I mean, one day you read, I mean, it's interesting, all these stupid newspapers, they had, whenever some movie star has a baby, they put it on the front page, right? And whenever they break up, it comes on the front page too. So, but we should imbibe this spirit in this Krishna consciousness movement to remain chaste and faithful to His divine grace, Śrīla Prabhupāda. Serving His mission, that means serving His mission, regardless of the situation that arises. Yeah, so many different situations will arise that will tempt us or whatever. And so we remain faithful serving Śrīla Prabhupāda's mission. I mean, is that so many... I mean, if I had known practically all the disturbances and things I'd had to deal with throughout the age, and, you know, in the GBC, you know, so many issues come up. Recently there was an issue, so, you know, some devotee having some problems. You know, I'm not going to get into the details. But I would have been frightened 40 years ago or 50 years ago, whenever I joined ISKCON. But somehow or other, I always remember that my identity is in serving His divine grace to the Prabhupada. And that actually, then you actually pass the test. I mean, we're all going to be confronted with so many tests like that. So any questions or comments? Actually, we'll leave time open for questions, comments, arguments, problems. Yeah.
You mentioned earlier that one cannot fix one's mind materially or spiritually.
Well, I said that the problem with being a conditioned soul is you can't fix your mind, you know, basically on anything except for sense gratification. Even that's very short. You know, it's flickering. Chanchalahi manha krishna pramati. Krishna says this in the... Arjuna says it in the sixth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. Chanchalahi manha krishna pramati balavadridam tashaham nigraham manye vayor iva shadushkaram. He says the mind is restless, turbulent, and obstinate, and very strong. And control it is like controlling the wind, vayor iva shadushkaram. So we find that even in the material world, the people really can't fix their minds, like even on their wives, or if they're taking up devotional service. What Prabhupada said here, unless one is an advanced devotee, he cannot fix his eyes on the deity in the temple. So I'm just making a comparison with someone in the material world, because the mind is always flickering, they're always looking for different types of sense gratification. Avartam gyanamay tena gyani no nechavayana kamarupena kontiya dusprena lenacha. That one's never satisfied, even in the material world. So when you're taking up devotional service, you're sort of twixt and in between. You can't fix your mind on sense gratification, you can't fix your mind on Krishna, so you're in a difficult situation. So you have to. So you fix your mind on service, because you can't really meditate on the deities 24 hours a day. Now, Prabhupada here mentions nirjana bhajan. That's when one becomes very advanced in devotional service, and then they can fix their mind. Nirjana bhajan is the time when the spiritual master, an advanced devotee, decides to renounce basically most of his external activities and just engage in solitary. Nirjana bhajan means solitary bhajan, where he just sits and chants Hare Krishna. I mean, he may eat a little prasadam too. That's not prohibited. But basically, you know, no more management. In other words, one should plan for that later on in life, you know, whenever it's practical. And Prabhupada asked for that, but of course we never allowed him to be able to do that, just to write his books, which is part of Nirjana Bhajan, because we engage him in management. But what I'm seeing is that basically at a certain point in life, not all of you, you're all still young, but at a certain point in life, we should think of winding things down. You know, when you're young, you're all wound up, and then when you get older, like at my age at 60, You know, you're just thinking, you know, just wind things down gradually and just have, you know, maybe 20, 30 years, but keep winding it down gradually. It's not that you give it up all of a sudden. And then eventually you just can engage in just chanting and hearing, which is, but you have to be advanced to be able to do that. You can't just artificially, if you artificially do that, you'll actually fall down from devotional service. At a particular stage of life, that we should all be understanding, that's what we're supposed to do at a certain age. You know, at 120. But, yeah.
So, and we're talking about, Srila Prabhupada was talking about service to the spiritual master.
Yeah.
And so, how can we understand at that stage that you're just talking about, near of Vajna, is
Well, it is rendering service because Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur said he would be very, he would think his whole mission is successful if one disciple became a pure devotee. You know, so we're not denigrating bhajan, but when one is able to engage in that nirjana bhajan, then that sets an example for other people that's still preaching. Like Gorkhashodas Babaji Maharaj. I mean, he was still preaching, maybe not in an external sense of distributing books or doing anything like that, but he was an example for others. You know, I mean, we become very inspired by those examples. And if we could see some of our God brothers or God sisters, certainly they are, some of them are very qualified, just completely absorbed. I mean, I'll give you an example. Like, if you look at... of course, he's not exactly doing 100% nirjana bhajan, but Mahanidhi Maharaj, you know, in Radhakund. And he's chanting, he's writing books, and he gives classes. You know, that's not prohibited, giving classes, but he's not... He renounced his management many years ago. I remember he was in charge of the Baltimore Temple. I don't know if you remember this. Many, many years ago. And he just gave it up to go to Braj. And of course, I, in my very intelligent way, started preaching to him, you can't give it up. I said, you can't give it up. No, your real service is just staying in Baltimore. But, you know, obviously he was ready to go to Radhakund and stay there. And Krishna's provided him a nice facility. He has a nice, just a nice house with a garden and everything like that. And, you know, different devotees provided that for him. And he's engaging, just hearing and chanting and preaching Krishna consciousness. You know, once in a while he goes to Vrindavan or Delhi to preach a little bit, but basically he's engaged in the bhajan there in Radhakund. So, and devotees find that inspiring. It's not that he's not doing service to Srila Prabhupada, but he's inspiring people by writing books. You know, wrote a book about the Gayatri Mantra and other things like that. So here's a devotee, you know, if you see one of your God brothers that made it or, you know, is very advanced, it inspires you. But if you see everybody just falling by the wayside, you think, ah, isn't it? You know, everybody I knew 30 years ago, I mean, they're all, you know, where have all the sannyasis gone? Gone to Grihas, everyone. Anyways, you know, like that song during the 1960s, where have all the young men gone? Anyway. So, you know, so I think it's quite inspiring for me to see when someone is actually qualified to do that. You know, they still preach, but it's primarily bhajan they're engaged in. I mean, if you go to Radhakund, Mahanidhi Maharaj will be bathing there in the morning, and even in the cold. You know, me in India, I need my hot water and, you know, what's it called, a geyser. Or geyser. In India, the hot water heaters are called geysers. So, in America, a geyser is an old man. Right? The old geyser. You know, so you turn it on, and you know, many people got electrocuted by the geysers. Because it's not grounded, none of the pipes are grounded, and it's right next to... I've had that experience, too. I haven't got electrocuted, but I got shocks. So, you know, I need my hot water, but here's Mahanidhi Maharaj, you know, same age as me. And he's bathing in Radhakund in the cold, in the middle of the winter. And so, you know, to me, I find that inspiring. I don't get envious or upset, you know, hey, he shouldn't be doing that. I'm thinking this is inspiring. Because, you know, one day I want to be ready to do that. So gradually, and that's service. It's not that everybody does that. But, you know, at a certain time in life, you know, I'm not saying a 20-year-old boy. Anytime a 20-year-old person has tried it, I remember there was one sannyasi who tried that when he was 20 years old. You know, he ended up getting married eventually. He was from France. Because, you know, he wasn't ready for it. But, you know, certainly Prabhupada, in Prabhupada society, we're going to have devotees like that. And it's going to be very inspiring for all of us. Isn't it? You know, so I think I know that is service too. And Prabhupada gave that example. That's when the spiritual master retires for Nirjana Bhajan. So that's something that's done. It's not something that's not done. Prabhupada would say the spiritual master should never retire for Nirjana Bhajan. Prabhupada never said that. Of course, Prabhupada himself, he wanted to die on the battlefield. You know, but other times he said, I wish my disciples would relieve me so I could engage in just translating books and chanting. So, you know, Prabhupada did indicate some desire for that too. Although Prabhupada also indicated the desire to die like Arjuna or a Kshatriya on the battlefield. So you find both these different moods exhibited by Prabhupada. However, you know, we should think in certain point of life, you know, when you don't have any bodily energy left to go around and just like harass people anymore, then you should just be thinking, you know, how to wind it down. I'm not saying any of you should be thinking like that. You're all young men and women. But, you know, I start thinking about that. You know, I have a lot more years, if Krishna willing, knock on wood, as they say. So, but, you know, it's better to wake up before we get a wake-up call. Do you understand? A wake-up call means like some heavy disease. Like I was talking to a devotee with a disease last night, and this devotee, her whole priorities are shifting because of her disease. So it's better to wake up before someone has to put the alarm on for us. You understand? Because it's going to happen to all of us. You know, there's a certain point we've got to wind things down. You can't just continue your material activity. So, yes, this Nirjana Bhajan is recommended when you're ready. Bhaktivinoda Thakur did it during his final year or two. He made believe he was sick so nobody would bother him. You know that? He feigned sickness. That means he made believe he was sick so he could just engage in just chanting and hearing for the final year or two of his pastime. Anyway, nobody should do that here.